Well, this morning we've come to Luke's Gospel, chapter 19. Jesus and his disciples are on their way to Jerusalem, and they've come to the town of Jericho, and now they're passing through the town. I want you to use your imagination. You may find it easier if you've ever visited Turkey or Egypt or almost anywhere else in the Middle East. If you've been to a town in Turkey, you'll know how narrow and crowded the streets can be. Market stalls, donkey carts, people selling food by the roadside, beggars, and crowds. Crowds of people everywhere. Well, we're in the middle of Jericho. It would be crowded any time, but today the streets are absolutely packed solid with people. Why? Because people have heard that Jesus is coming through the town. Remember, Jesus is a celebrity. Everyone's heard stories about this amazing preacher from up north who's done all these astonishing miracles. In fact, they've not just heard stories, they've been given proof. There was a blind man who used to sit by the roadside just outside Jericho. And he heard that Jesus was passing by, and he shouted to Jesus for help. And Jesus healed him there and then, took away his blindness. Lots of people saw that happen. Everyone in Jericho knows about that. And they want to see the man who did that miracle. And now that man has actually arrived here in the town. And he's not on his own. He's got a great crowd of followers marching with him. He's got his own officers, 12 of them. They're known as his apostles. And there's a group of women who are traveling with them. They're sort of the housekeepers for the whole group. And then there's this huge crowd of people whom he's picked up along the way. People who have decided to follow him. In fact, that man who was blind is one of those people. He's there marching along with Jesus. It says he followed Jesus. It's like a small army marching with Jesus. They're not all wearing armor. They're not, most of them, carrying swords. But it's a formidable body of men and women who are marching along together. And there are all sorts of rumors about why Jesus is leading this crowd up to Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital city. Some people think that Jesus is marching there to start a revolution. Some people think he's going to overthrow the government. Some people think he's going to announce the end of the world or bring the end of the world when he reaches Jerusalem. And everyone wants to know what's going on. Everyone wants to see Jesus. Who is he? Where does he get that power from? How does he do these miracles? What's he up to? What's he planning? And so all the people are out there in the streets wanting to see Jesus. I guess a lot of those people are hoping that Jesus will stop and speak to them. You know, when there's a celebrity in town, everyone wants to meet the celebrity, don't they? Saying to Anne just yesterday that almost everybody we meet seems to have some story of how they know some celebrity. Even elderly lady whom Carol visits in the meadows, she has her celebrity who stays in touch with her. So she imagines. Everybody wants to be able to say, I know somebody who's famous. I met so-and-so. I guess everybody there in Jericho is hoping that they'll have the opportunity actually to meet Jesus. He's the celebrity of the day. You know, we got an invitation the other day to enter a competition. And the prize, if you won the competition, was that you could meet Alexander McCall Smith and have tea with him. Alexander who? Well, he's an author who's written some very popular books. He's a celebrity. So people want to meet him. And they'll enter the competition just to have the opportunity to meet Alexander McCall Smith. Well, there were lots of people in Jericho. They'd have given their eye teeth for the opportunity to meet Jesus, to be introduced to him, to have him in their home. And I suspect most of them wouldn't have known why they wanted to meet him. It would just be because he was a celebrity. Famous. All right, that's the scene in the middle of Jericho. And I hope you can see it in your mind's eye. And the streets, the procession, and the crowd of people who want to see Jesus. And if possible, to meet Jesus. Now, it's like a page in a Where's Wally book. It's one little detail in the picture that you might not notice at first, but which is very important. Do you see? There's a tree growing there at the street corner. Sycamore tree. Thick leaves, tall trunk. Now look at it carefully. Yeah, look carefully. Do you see? There's a man peering out through the leaves of the tree. There's a man up in that tree, watching the procession go by. His name's Zacchaeus, or Zacchaeus, or however you want to pronounce it. I pronounce it differently every Sunday. And we're going to talk about Zacchaeus this morning. We're going to talk about the man in the tree. Let me tell you about Zacchaeus. Four things you need to know about Zacchaeus. Number one, he was a tax collector. And we talked about tax collectors lots of times. Tax collectors in Jesus' time were crooks. They weren't like tax collectors today, employed by the government just to work out how much people owe and then collect that much from them. They were self-employed, and their aim was to squeeze as much out of people as they possibly could. And most of them were ruthless, brutal thugs. And worse than that, they were traitors. They were the people the Romans used to do their dirty work. They used Jewish tax collectors to milk the local Jewish population. So tax collectors were collaborators. They were working with the Romans to rob their own people. The only people who ever became tax collectors were people who thought money was more important than, excuse me, than anything else. To be a tax collector, it meant that you were the sort of person who couldn't be bothered about right and wrong. You weren't bothered about what other people thought of you. You weren't bothered about God, what God thought of you. And that's the sort of man that Zacchaeus was. He was a tax collector, a brutal, dishonest thug, a godless man. Second thing about Zacchaeus, he was good at his job. It says he was a chief tax collector. He wasn't just one of the jobsworths who went and knocked on people's doors or arranged accidents for them. He was the boss. He was the man who sat in the leather chair behind the big desk. He was the controller. He told everyone else what to do. He had real power. He'd got to the top. Do you remember in the last chapter of Luke, we read about a rich ruler who came to Jesus Well, this man was a ruler as well, in his own way. Luke uses the same word for this man as he did for that man. A ruler, he just joins it onto the word tax collector. A ruling tax collector. So this man was successful. This man was rich. Everybody in Jericho knew who this man was. He wasn't just the run-of-the-mill ruthless tax collector. He was Mr. More Ruthless Than Anyone Else tax collector. The third thing about Zacchaeus, he was small. It says it at the end of verse 3. He was small of stature. In a way, that makes him, for me, an even more sinister figure. Don't misunderstand me. I've not got anything against people who are small. Some of my best friends are small. But some of the most evil and ruthless people have been tiny. It's as if with some of them, they try to compensate for their insignificant size by being that much more ruthless and vicious than anybody else. They've got something to prove. They've got to assert themselves. You know, I look back over all the years we ran the Sunday school here, and I think about all the difficult youngsters we've known over the years. And do you know, the one that stands out in my mind for his sheer nastiness, his cockiness, his viciousness, he was diminutive. Some of the Sunday school teachers could supply the name. People who knew Napoleon said he was driven by the fact that he was so small. He had to dominate everyone by his will because he couldn't do it by his size. Again, it doesn't make a man popular, does it? A cocky little brute swaggering around, pushing other people about. Nobody's going to like a man like that, are they? A little Hitler, we say. I mean, okay, I'm guessing. I've got to say that. I'm guessing about the way his size affected him. But I'm not guessing about the three big things we've said. He was a tax collector, a wicked, sinful man. He was a chief tax collector, a man with real power and an awful lot of money. And he was small. And the fourth thing about him, he wanted to know who Jesus was. That's what it says in verse 3. He was seeking to see who Jesus was. In fact, it's not just that he wanted to know who Jesus was. Luke uses a much stronger word. He was seeking to see who Jesus was. He was searching. That's the word that's used. This was a serious business for him. He had this question in his mind. Who is Jesus? And he was really trying. He was really searching to find out the answer to that question. Never have guessed that, would you? If you had seen this rich, successful, powerful gangster sitting in his office in Jericho, or sending out his men to do their dirty work, you'd never have imagined that he was asking that sort of question. That he was searching. That as he's sitting there in his office, that's the question that's going round and round in his mind. Who is Jesus? Who is Jesus? But that's the state he was in. Something had triggered in this man a real desire to find out about Jesus. Well, I say something had triggered that desire. It wasn't something, it was someone. God had triggered that desire in Zacchaeus. I don't know how God had done it, but God had put into Zacchaeus's mind and heart the desire to get an answer to that question, who is Jesus? God uses different ways to get different people searching. I'll give you three different ways. First way, with some people, he just sets their mind working. It all starts just as an intellectual question that they want to puzzle out. Maybe it was like that for Zacchaeus. He's heard these stories about Jesus, about the miracles Jesus did. He's heard about blind people, like the man just outside Jericho, who has been given his sight. He's heard about thousands of people fed with a few bread rolls and a couple of sardines. He's heard about people being brought back from the dead. And he says, well, it's obviously trickery, isn't it? The man's a conjurer. But I wonder how he does it. I wonder how he manages to con a crowd of 5,000 people. I wonder where the mirrors are and the smoke. And he starts checking it out. And the more he investigates the facts, the more baffling it becomes. He just doesn't see how Jesus could be tricking people. And it becomes a bigger and bigger conundrum in his mind. And then one day the thought flashes through his mind. What if it's real? I mean, after all, I've investigated all the facts and I can't see any way it could be trickery. What if it's real? What if Jesus really does have that power? Well, if he does, where's he got it from? Who is he? And he wants to know. He's got to find out who Jesus is. There are some people who just drift through life. And they don't seem to have any bump of curiosity at all. They just aren't interested in finding out about anything. They never think. They just believe whatever they're told. They never ask questions. Well, I think that's really sad. And I hope that you're not like that. I hope that you've got an inquiring mind. That you're the sort of person who wants to find out the truth about things. You want answers. You're not satisfied till you've got answers. How does electricity actually work? Who killed President Kennedy? Did the Americans really put a man on the moon? And if so, why does the flag seem to be fluttering in the breeze? Why shouldn't you eat potatoes grown in a bottle? Well, if you're that sort of person, if you're a person who thinks, if you're a person who thinks it's important to think and to ask questions and to get the answers, this is the challenge. Think about Jesus. Ask yourself some questions about him. Who actually was he? Did he really live? Did he really die? Was that a corpse that was taken down from the cross? A corpse with the blood drained out of it? Did he really come back from the dead? Why did people love him so much? So much that they were willing to die for him even after he had been crucified. How is it that a man put to death as a criminal 2,000 years ago has got followers all over the world today? people who would still be willing to die for him. Why are there so many people from every country, every culture, every society, every background who say, I love Jesus? And who are going to spend the rest of their lives following him? What is Jesus' secret? How can you explain him? Who is he? Isn't that a question worth asking? Isn't that a question worth searching to find the answer? Then there's a second way God starts people searching for Jesus. With a lot of people, it's just that they're not happy. God makes them unhappy. And maybe it was like that for Zacchaeus. He's got all the things he wanted. He's got his money. He's got his power. He can push people around. He thought that's what he wanted. And he's got it now. He's got to the top where he wanted to be. And he's found that there's nothing there. He's still not happy. He's bored. He's discontented. Maybe he's lonely as well. And then he hears about this strange preacher, Jesus. And Jesus really does sound strange to a man like Zacchaeus. Jesus does things that none of the other preachers do. And one thing Zacchaeus hears about Jesus is this, that he's got lots of tax collectors as friends. Now that is really weird. Because religious people did not want anything to do with tax collectors. And yet Jesus seems to go out of his way to befriend them. And then Zacchaeus hears that one of Jesus' closest friends, one of the 12 who go with Jesus everywhere, was a tax collector himself. A man called Matthew or Levi. Jesus just walked into Matthew's office one day, said, follow me. Matthew got up, he left his business, he followed Jesus. And Zacchaeus thinks, what's that all about? Perhaps he'd done business with Matthew in the past. And he says, what on earth has possessed Matthew? I mean, I've heard he's really happy now. I've heard that he just goes everywhere talking about Jesus. And I'm not happy. Maybe I need to find out who Jesus is. Are you a happy person? I know that there are some of you here this morning who are not Christians. I just want to ask you, are you happy? Are you contented? Are you at peace with yourself? If not, why not? You're free. You're living your life the way you choose to. You've got what you want. You want to live without Jesus, and you are doing. You're fixing your own priorities. Just like Zacchaeus did. So why aren't you happy? Well, maybe it's because of what's missing. What's missing is Jesus himself. You need Jesus Christ to be your saviour. You need Jesus Christ to be your friend. And you know that there are people in this room who are happy. And the reason they're happy is because they do have Jesus Christ. So listen to them. And then ask yourself, who is Jesus? And then a third way that God gets people asking about Jesus is that he wakes up their conscience. Everyone has got a conscience. But with most people, it's asleep most of the time. But God can wake it up. So somebody starts realizing that the way they've been living is just plain wrong. And they start feeling guilty and ashamed. And they begin to feel dirty. And they start wishing they could be forgiven. They start wishing they could start over. Well, maybe it was like that with Zacchaeus. It never used to bother him that he had ripped off so many people. He could just laugh it off. And it wasn't his fault if people got hurt, was it? They should just pay up and not argue. You know, there are people who do the most horrible things and it just doesn't bother them. They treat other people really badly and they don't care. Their conscience is asleep. They ignore God and they abuse God and it doesn't worry them. They can somehow manage to blank off the conscience. But then God wakes it up. And they start feeling guilty. And they start feeling frightened. Well, maybe God did that for Zacchaeus. Maybe Zacchaeus had just reached the point where he hated the life he was living and the sort of man he'd become. Do you like the sort of person you are? Maybe Zacchaeus reached the point where he just didn't want to be the sort of man he was. But he didn't know how to change. He didn't have the strength of will to change himself. The fact was that he might not like it, but money was more important to him than anything else. He might feel guilty about the way he's made his money, but he still can't bring himself to give up the crookery, if it means giving up the money. Maybe he was like a drug addict. Hates the stuff, hates the lifestyle, hates the trouble it brings, but can't imagine living without it. Maybe Zacchaeus was like that. He's reached a stage where he hates the tacky, sick, disgusting things he does. But he feels he's trapped in it. And then he hears about Jesus. And he hears that Jesus is going around preaching that there's a way for people to be forgiven and changed. And he hears about people whom Jesus has changed. And he says, I wonder if it's real. I need to find out more about this Jesus. Is your conscience awake? Do you feel guilty about the things you've done and about the people you've hurt, about the way you've treated your parents, about the lies you've told? Do you feel guilty about the way you've treated God, about how ungrateful you've been to him? You ought to. If you've never felt guilty before, well, if there's one thing I pray for you, it's that God will start showing you just how bad your life actually is. And what a selfish person you are and how badly you've treated him. I want you to feel that. But then I want you to find out about Jesus. Because Jesus can make you into a new person. And he can wipe out everything you've ever done wrong. And he can wash you clean. And he can change you from being that selfish, self-centered person whom even you don't like into a person who really cares about others. He can change you from being one of God's enemies into being one of God's children. So you need to find out who Jesus is, whether he really is who your parents say he is, who the preacher says he is, who the Bible says he is. Well, I don't know what it was that set Zacchaeus off asking the question, who is Jesus? Could have been any one of those three ways, couldn't it? Or any combination of those three ways. What I do know is that Zacchaeus was serious about it. He must have been because he climbed that tree. He heard that Jesus was coming to Jericho. He wanted to see who Jesus was. He found the streets packed solid. He was too small to see over people's heads. So he ran down the road, got ahead of the procession. And then he climbed up into that tree so that he could have a good look at Jesus as Jesus was passing by. I guess some people must have smirked when they saw the great man, the mafia boss, running down the road or scrambling up the tree, not very dignified, Not the way he usually appeared in public, hitching up his robes. He must have been serious, mustn't he? He knew he mustn't miss this opportunity. This might be his one and only opportunity to find out about Jesus. More important than his dignity. I want you to be serious too. You've got the opportunity to find out about Jesus. Don't waste it. I don't know what he hoped he would find out just by looking at Jesus from treetop height. Basically, all he'd find out was what Jesus looked like, wasn't it? Does he look impressive? Does he look like a king? How does he dress? Does he look kind? Does he look wise? Perhaps Zacchaeus just wants to see if he can glimpse the same thing in Jesus that Matthew had glimpsed. Maybe Zacchaeus is hoping that even from a distance he'll see something in Jesus that will explain why Jesus has got such attraction about him. Oh, but if only Zacchaeus could meet him. If only it weren't just a case of gazing from a treetop. If only Zacchaeus could actually talk to him. But that's not going to happen, is it? Not with so many hundreds of people getting in the way. And there's no way, is there, that Jesus is going to single out Zacchaeus. Because Zacchaeus is the most unpopular man in town. He's the man with the worst reputation. There's no way that holy Jesus is going to choose the worst man in town to talk to. So the best Zacchaeus can hope for is that at least Jesus will pass somewhere fairly close so that he'll be able to see him. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." He spoke to Zacchaeus by name. Zacchaeus. How did he know Zacchaeus's name? If he'd not met him before, how did he recognize Zacchaeus? Jesus knows the name of every person he speaks to. Every person who's searching for him. He knows your name. He's not just sending out a general call. Anybody out there who happens to hear me? Jesus is calling you by name. And he says, "Hurry. This is urgent. You've wasted enough of your life, Zacchaeus. This is your opportunity. Hurry, come down. Don't stay up there. Hurry, hurry now. You've wasted enough of your life. You had the opportunity, some of you, 10 years ago, and you wasted it. 5 years ago, you wasted it. Don't waste it now. Hurry, come down. Don't stay up there. Jesus is willing to have dealings with you, face to face." And then Jesus says to Zacchaeus, "I'm coming to your home. I'm going to stay with you today." The word that's used here means, or it implies, "I'm going to eat with you." And you know that eating with somebody back then was a sign of real friendship. Jesus, the Son of God, said to this wicked, very unpleasant man, "I'm willing to be your friend. I'm willing to come into your home, to sit with you at your table. I'm willing for us to be friends." I wonder if Zacchaeus had another friend in Jericho. I doubt it. Who could like a man like Zacchaeus? He'd have his cronies. He'd have his people who would flatter him, who'd lick his boots. I don't suppose he had friends. But Jesus was saying, "I'm willing to be your friend. And Jesus is willing to be your friend. He's willing to be there in your life, in your home. He's willing to be there for you every moment of the day, there at every meal you eat, there when you're with other people, there when you're on your own, there for you every day of your life, and there for you when you die, and there for you forever and ever. So come down and meet Jesus. And Zacchaeus hurried and he came down. He'd seen Jesus. He'd looked into Jesus' eyes as Jesus looked up at him. And he'd seen there the answer to his question. All his questions. He might not know very much about Jesus yet, but he knew that Jesus was the answer to all his needs. And it says he received Jesus gladly, took Jesus happily into his home. Ooh, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in that home over the next couple of hours. Or I wish I could have been manning a CCTV camera. I'd love to know all they talked about. How Zacchaeus poured out the story of his life. All the mess in it. All the horrible things he'd done. Jesus was the one person he could tell everything to. All the things he was ashamed of. All the sick things he'd done to different people. All the times he'd hardened his heart. On second thoughts, perhaps I'm glad I wasn't there to hear it. There are some things people have done that nobody should hear about except Jesus. But I do wish I could have heard Jesus answering, telling this man Zacchaeus that his father had sent him and his father had given him authority to forgive every sin. Telling Zacchaeus to trust him. Telling Zacchaeus that there was a place for him in his kingdom. I'd have loved to hear it. But I don't need to. Because I've already heard Jesus saying those things to me. Jesus has said to me, Stephen, I forgive you. I forgive you everything. Stephen, I love you. And I always will. I've heard Jesus giving me promises that I can rest on in life and in death and for eternity. And if you will open your heart and if you will open your life to the Lord Jesus, you will hear his voice too. I don't mean that you'll start hearing whispers in your ear or voices in your head. That's a kind of schizophrenia, not the Lord Jesus. I mean that Jesus will give you the absolute certainty that you personally are forgiven, that you are safe forever. Lots of people in Jericho couldn't understand why Jesus had singled out Zacchaeus, why Jesus had gone into his home. They grumbled, verse 7. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who's a sinner. They didn't think a holy man like Jesus should single out a sinner like Zacchaeus, let alone go into Zacchaeus' home, eat a meal with him, treat him like a friend. And if Jesus wants a meal here in Jericho, there are plenty of good people, religious people, who'd have been delighted to have him in their homes. Why pick on Zacchaeus? They got their answer, didn't they? When Jesus and Zacchaeus finally came out of the house. Verse 8, and Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, Behold, Lord, half of my goods here and now I give to the poor. He's not saying this has been what he's done in the past. He's saying, now I'm doing it. I just want to give away half of what I've got. There are poor people out there who need it more than I do. And if I've cheated anybody of anything, I'm paying it back here and now four times over. What's happened? A miracle's happened. This man has had his heart completely changed. This man, who was so utterly obsessed with money that it came before everything else doesn't care about money anymore. This man who didn't care who he's hurt cares about the needs of the poor and is thinking about them. This man has been set free. He's been set free from the addiction to money that he had. He's been set free by the power of Jesus Christ. One meeting with Jesus was all it took for his heart to be changed forever. His past forgiven, his heart changed. That's the answer to the grumbling, isn't it, that people were sounding off. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who's a sinner, but not to leave the man as a sinner, not to encourage him in his sin, but to rescue him from it. It's what we've seen before. Jesus is the great doctor. And he does go into the sick, to the people whose souls are sick, but not to leave them in their illness, but to make them well, to save them. That's the best answer the grumblers could have had. They can look at Zacchaeus and say, yes, Jesus went in to eat with a man who was a sinner, and Jesus rescued him from his sins. And then it's Jesus himself who supplies the second part of the answer. And Jesus said to him, verse 9, today salvation has come to this house, since this man also is a son of Abraham. Jesus came to save Israel, the real Israel, the true people of God. And the true people of God are those who recognize Jesus and whom Jesus saves from their sins. Salvation has come to this house. This man's been rescued. This man who was a hopeless, wicked, lost cause has been rescued. He's been saved. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. At the beginning of the passage, it says, Zacchaeus was seeking to see Jesus, to find out who Jesus was. But now we come to the end of the passage and we find out that Jesus was seeking Zacchaeus because Zacchaeus was lost. And Jesus came to seek the lost and to save them. Zacchaeus wouldn't have been seeking Jesus if Jesus hadn't been seeking him first. The reason that Zacchaeus wanted so much to find out who Jesus was is because the Spirit of Jesus had been working in Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus did not know who Jesus was. Jesus knew exactly who Zacchaeus was. And he knew he was somebody whom he was planning to save. And he did. Do you want to know who Jesus is? Do you want to be saved by him? If that's what you want, if you're seeking Jesus, it's because Jesus has come to seek you, and because Jesus is willing to save you.